My mom was 12 when she had me. So my father was only 15. And so, I mean, I grew up with my mom. We were like brothers and sisters. And I was exposed to drugs. So, you know, I was already put in that environment as a child. I started using marijuana and drinking at the age of 12 and became sexually active when I was about 14. I was dealing with my my home life, you know, and all the insecurities that I had from being exposed to violence and things like that. And just, I didn't know how to handle any of those problems other than harming my body when I would cut myself. And also men. I turned to men for, that's where I got my acceptance. And it made me feel more secure with myself, my body, and, you know, my life. I was really insecure about my life growing up. I was just seeking to fill that void in so many different areas, you know, of not having my dad in my life growing up. You know, he was in and out of prison, and just had a lot of emptiness that I was trying to fill with addiction and just men, really. Without that, I didn't feel confident in myself. And just that was how I dealt with my insecurities. That was how I felt like, okay, I am pretty, or men do like me, or I am desired, was through sexual addiction with men. It was horrible. I think that was probably the hardest one for me to admit that I had a problem with, because there was a point in my life where I felt like it was just fun and partying. You know, I was a straight A student, but yet, you know, once a month, twice a month, I would go to parties with my friends and, you know, randomly hang out with guys. But I still had that self-respect. You know, I'd only slept with like 3 or 4 guys. And, you know, so I think once you just hit that line of like, you can't even count how many people you've slept with anymore, and you don't care, then that's when it becomes your addiction, because it's like, it doesn't even matter who it is. You don't have that self-respect anymore. And it's just something to fill the emptiness that you have inside. So it's no longer like, oh, okay, I'm drinking and I'm attracted to this guy. It becomes something totally different. It's like you're trying to fill an empty void inside of you.
Welcome to Unhooked. I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we're going to be talking about women's sexual addiction. Here with us is Robin Butler. Thank you for being with us. Addiction, sexual addiction in women, is that what you might call promiscuity?
No, I think there's a big difference between promiscuity in and of itself and actual sex addiction, although obviously someone with a sex addiction is going to be promiscuous. I think that promiscuity can be a way of trying to find relationship, intimacy, and there's a lack of self-esteem and a feeling that the only way that they can have that intimacy, say with a man, is if they do give sex. They say women give sex for love and men give love for sex. And so oftentimes, again, if a woman is insecure, and especially in this culture where, you know, the media portrays relationships as very sexual from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And since with men, sex does not equate a relationship, and women tend to emotionally attach in the presence, normal women, mm-hmm. emotionally attach in the context of a sexual relationship. When that doesn't work out, then they seek it in another relationship, and then another, and then another. That isn't the same thing as sexual addiction.
Okay, how would you define sexual addiction?
Sexual addiction, like other addictions, is a compulsive need for or desire for or acting out behavior for the sex itself. Mm-hmm. And that was once thought to be pretty much a man's purview. Mm-hmm. Sex addiction, you know, they're the ones that right. just want sex for sex. Women don't. But actually, that has been increasing. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that. The media has sexualized almost everybody that pays attention to the media in that arena. And although women are not biologically programmed for that, with enough exposure, and especially early exposure, you know, you've mm-hmm. talked about sexual abuse. That sexualizes the victims at a very young age.
So a history of sexual abuse. So, for example, I can think of a little girl that I work with who very early on was not nurtured and then sexually abused, and already at the age of 4 and 5 has a lot of sexual acting out. And our concern was this propensity towards sexualized behavior.
Exactly. Because a child doesn't have the wherewithal to understand sexuality in a healthy context. You know, sex has been compared to a fire. When it's contained in the fireplace, it's warm and inviting and a beautiful thing. When it gets outside the fireplace, it's when it causes a lot of the damage. And because when a child is sexually abused, it takes it outside that context. Mm-hmm. And what happens is they just experience the physical, and this is where it gets kind of crazy making for them, they experience the physical pleasure. And sometimes we'll have, an orgasm or whatever, and it's in the context of this abnormal setting, sometimes with violence, sometimes without violence. One of the things when I was working with kids that had been sexually molested and couldn't understand why they blamed themselves and had so much self-loathing, and it took me a while to figure out it was because part of them enjoyed the experience, the physical experience, because oftentimes this happens with significant others that they're close to, that they feel special with.
Yeah, we hear a lot of times that confusion because of the physiological as opposed to really how it felt for them. And so sexual abuse as a child is one of the things that we see then in sex addiction. What are other characteristics of?
Any kind of trauma where their self-esteem has been damaged, where they don't have any connection with healthy relationships. So you have the negative relationship, but you don't have anything healthy to compare it to. And sometimes there's some biological predisposition for mood disorders, bipolar disorder. One of the aspects of bipolar disorder is when somebody is in a hypomanic or manic phase, they're hypersexual anyway. So if somebody has that disorder, when they're hypersexual, they're going to be acting out and their judgment center isn't working right anyway. So that could be part of it. Also, if they've inherited a biological predisposition for obsessive-compulsive disorder, this can become a very obsessive-compulsive behavior that they don't even really want to do, but yet feel driven to do. Anxiety disorders, it's a form of relieving their anxiety. The culture, again, being exposed to pornography, especially at an early age. And sometimes they don't even have to be physically abused or sexually abused in a touching way, just having somebody make sexual comments to them when they're younger, or early sexual experiences in any way. Mm-hmm. And look at our culture today. I mean, it's all over the place, everywhere.
You get validated for sexuality, and it sounds like that's a very environmental thing.
Very much so.
I'm wondering, we talked at the beginning about we think of sexual addiction as a male disorder more likely. Are there differences between the etiology for men or women in sex addiction?
I think, and even though we've come a long way as a culture, still the differences in power between men and women. I think women probably have always used sex to kind of equalize the power structure. But I think especially when there's abuse or especially when children have been sexualized young, they find that they can get a lot of what they want. Mm-hmm. Not what they really need, like the intimacy and all, but material things at a young age sometimes, because sometimes they're given things to keep this quiet and all like that. And they learn how to manipulate people with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes you see prostitutes or people that are acting out in this way, they have power and control over men or other people.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting discussion on how women really do have so many things about sexual addiction that we need to be aware of. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
I was never faithful. No matter what relationship I was in, one guy was not enough to make me feel like, I was worthy or that I was good enough. And of course, being in an abusive relationship did not help that at all. When I first got married, I even had that thought in my head, like, am I going to be able to do this? Like, I didn't know if I could do it. it was probably about 5 years into my addiction. Me and my husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, I went to the hospital. I was having loss of consciousness and weird things were happening. You know, I was getting really pale in the face. And so we went to the hospital and they said, wow, I don't know how you're alive right now, but you have years of accumulated swelling on your aortic valve. And they told me that if I didn't have heart surgery, that I wouldn't live to see the age of 30. And I just felt like God was punishing me for the past that I had lived, for being unfaithful to my husband, and just the choices that I had made in life. I felt like I was being punished, and I didn't quite grasp what was happening to me. So I think that is when everything got really bad. That's when just all my addictions mingled into one. Usually they were very individual, but after my heart surgery, it all hit me like a ton of bricks. I was still dealing with my self-harm. I was being unfaithful to my husband, and I was an intravenous heroin user. I OD'd in a bar parking lot just 30 days after having open heart surgery. And my turning point was when I talked to my husband and I spilled everything out to him. I spilled everything out to him about being unfaithful, about my heroin addiction. Just, I thought it was gonna end our marriage. I definitely didn't expect for him to forgive me, but he told me that I was still an angel in his eyes and that he loved me and God forgave me and that I still had a chance to turn around and, you know, make our marriage work. And that was when I really knew, like, okay, God, like, because the Carl that I once knew was not, he would not have taken it that way. We became really violent and stuff in our relationship. It was just totally dysfunctional. So hearing him say that, I knew there was a God. At that moment, I knew that there was a God.
Welcome back to Unhook, where we've been talking about sexual addiction in women. And thank you, Robin Butler, for being here with us. When I'm thinking about the sexual addiction in women, what might be some of the behaviors or characteristics that I might see in understanding women and sexual addiction?
Okay, like with other addictions, it's a behavior that significantly impacts their occupational social functioning and puts them in danger. And it's usually characterized by excessive preoccupation, obsession with masturbation, pornography, often these days online kinds of situation, either viewing or actually these days making tapes of themselves and exposing themselves to the general public and on the sites where there's a lot of voyeurs that tune into that. And a lot of times it's enhanced by drugs, you know, amphetamines, alcohol, because that will loosen up inhibitions. The stimulants actually increase the sex drive. And anything that is dangerous, going to places that could be dangerous, bars, even some prostitution, you know, getting involved in illicit affairs with people that's high risk for being caught, and doing things that could get them fired, could lose their marriages if they're married, lose their children if they have children, and all these risky kinds of behaviors that it doesn't matter. They have to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. That would be, and that, you know, sexual addiction isn't just liking sex a lot. Mm-hmm. Very, very different. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
They will go to dangerous lengths to keep doing this. And they need more and more and more, and they have to do it in ways that are more and more dangerous.
So it sounds to me that when you're saying it in this way, that there needs to be treatment, or there are treatment options then? What would treatment look like?
Yeah, most of the time you wouldn't see women presenting themselves just for the sexual addiction. Mm-hmm. And usually, especially for women, a sex addiction isn't in isolation. There's usually mood disorders, there's other substance abuse, and at least the women that I have seen in treatment have these other disorders, and this comes out as part of it. When they stop one addiction, then they move on to the sex addiction. And so it's multifaceted treatment. You know, psychotherapy, medications for like the illnesses that I mentioned before, the bipolar, the obsessive compulsive, the depression. But the biggest piece is, and this is where it's very difficult, is getting out of the dark the darkness of denial and bringing mm-hmm. their pain and their negative feelings into the light and being able to feel again. Because a lot of what they're medicating is numbness, what we call anhedonia in our field, where they have a difficult time feeling anything. And they would rather feel this intensity, this physical sensation temporarily than not feel anything at all. Mm-hmm. And bringing them back and kind of to where they were in childhood, where they just really shut down. And, you know, 12-step recovery, and that's basically a spiritual program. You know, it's an organized way of actually coming to letting go of all these things that don't work and finding that deeper relationship that we all need and seek that nothing else can fill. You know, and that's that spiritual relationship.
Yeah, certainly. And when we think about, you know, as women and our spirituality, it is a very relational spirituality. So we can, I think you can really see how it would connect to that. And for women who perhaps have sexual addiction or et cetera, that might be impactful for them.
Yeah, the difference between men and women is women have more shame for sex addiction because that it's like that's not very feminine to have a sex addiction. That's a man thing. However, they are more relational, and so oftentimes they will be much more amenable to treatment, especially relational treatment and coming to groups and relating with other women. I think it's really important that women actually be in groups with other women and women therapists, especially when they have sexual addictions, because with other men, that is going to be very dangerous, at least at first, until they can do some healing. Being in relationship with another man therapist or a men's group, they would be high risk for falling into something inappropriate in that kind of setting.
Yeah, and you know, when we think of at least treatment or ways that families should support when we hear about men and sexual addiction is really the role that the spouse or the significant other would have in this. I would imagine, you know, if somebody's watching this, and what role would family members or spouses have in actually either not helping or helping the sex addict?
I think like with any other addiction, you have to stop enabling. Mm-hmm. And in a loving way, but in a firm way, let them know that, you know, you're concerned and this behavior has gotten out of control and that they need to seek help and that you're going to do everything you can to support that and whatever you can do to make it difficult for them to continue to pursue that. You know, there's a fine line between being loving, supportive, and caring and actually enabling that behavior to continue, because if it takes its trajectory, it can be just as deadly as any other kind of addiction. When you think about all the diseases that are out there,
yes,
and you think, is this a dangerous addiction? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous.
And I would think for couples that couples therapy, et cetera, would be an important part to healing the relationship as well.
Oh, definitely.
So, you know, I just really kind of looking over the topic and how this is something that women in our world are dealing with, and how the media has really, and society has made us objects many times, that really the importance of the how spirituality plays into this and how Christ, his example of how women need to be treated, I think is an important part of this.
One of the things I think we have to remember, too, and this is kind of like almost with food addiction, where it's ubiquitous all around, is that we have to really learn to kind of guard our minds, our hearts, and our souls these days. Mm-hmm. Because, again, everywhere we look, mm-hmm. there it is, and that's kind of hard to do.
Yes.
But I think when we're especially in the throes of this kind of thing, we need to really do what we can to limit our exposure.
Yes. And for, you know, all the women that we might be, you know, sharing with, is guard the heart. It's a very important thing.
Especially.
Thank you very much.
And
Unhooked, we'll be right back.
My My view of God has changed so much. It's actually kind of crazy because when I first found God, I thought of him as somebody who punishes you for the mistakes that you've made and like I'm going to teach you a lesson type of God. But now I've learned that he is a loving God, you know, and that everything, even things that Satan has put in my life has helped me to grow. I mean, it got to the point in my husband's relationship where I despised him. You know, I blamed him for my addiction. He was controlling. I felt like he took away my whole family from me. He didn't want me to have any friends. He just wanted me to himself. He wanted to isolate me. And that was really what strengthened my walk with God. It was that God could turn something like that into something beautiful. Our marriage is totally restored. It's so weird. I get butterflies and stuff when I see him. And I mean, like I said, it was to the point where I despised him. I wasn't physically attracted to him anymore. We both looked like addicts. I was 95 pounds, you know. There was nothing attractive there at all. And God's restored everything. I know now that, and I have the confidence that I will be a good and faithful wife. I don't think that sexual addiction would be strong in anybody's life if they had God. But the reason it was so strong in my life was because I was trying to fill empty voids, you know, and since I found God, he fills every one of those voids. All my addictive personality is gone. I used to feel like I couldn't live without someone. Like when I was dating in high school, oh, if this boy broke up with me, I don't think I could live. I can't live without him. You know, now, of course, I would never want to live without my husband or people in my family, but I know that I can with God. I know that I can get through anything, and there's nothing that he'll throw at me that I can't handle. God gives me the strength and just the God confidence, you know, to do these things that I never thought that I could do. My name is Stephanie and I'm unhooked.
Stephanie shared with us her painful story of sex addiction. Often we tend to associate sex addiction with men. But there are many women who also fall into this addiction because most of the time they've been abused as children. Many times when a young lady has been sexually abused, she associates men with sex, pleasing men with giving her body to a man. This is a trap that not only hurts God, but hurts her terribly. He's not put off by that sex addiction. He understands why any of us, male or female, struggle with sex addiction. One of the things that he wants us to know is that whatever we were going through that led up to our addiction, even if it's sexual abuse, that he was there, and not only there, but that he was feeling it. I want to read this reassuring word from Isaiah chapter 63, verse 9. In all their suffering, he also suffered, and he personally rescued them. He lifted them up and carried them all through the years. What this tells me is that no matter what I was going through, Jesus was suffering as well. He was there, but he was feeling my pain. Now, as a human being, when I feel pain, I put up defenses to keep from feeling it fully. But God in his love never puts up defenses. He feels all of it. He feels it fully. And so who was feeling more pain, God or me? I would suggest to you that God was feeling it more deeply and more fully than you ever could. This is the kind of God that has captured my heart. This is the kind of God that I have surrendered my life to. One who has felt everything that I've ever felt even more fully than I could ever feel it. That kind of a God loves you. That kind of a God is carrying you from the time of your first hurt up to your present day. And he's going to carry you into your future in recovery. That's the kind of God that we're suggesting that you can trust. For more information about how to break free from sex addiction, how to trust this kind of God, and how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.